This is a real scriptural feast we have today. These are beautiful, iconic passages, each one of them. Not only are they striking in themselves, but also they build upon one another in a way that is remarkable, with amazing clarity. And taken together, these scripture passages brought to my mind memories of two men, each coincidentally named Charles, whom I encountered at very different times in my life. I'll get to them in a bit. Let's look at the scripture first. Jeremiah writes of his call to be a prophet coming before he was formed in the womb. And he hears two promises from the Lord. First, that being a prophet is hard, that the powers of the world will fight against the message of the divine. And second, that he will never be alone in his work. God will always be with him. Then we read from the 13th chapter of Paul's letter, and thank you, Kathleen, that was very well done. Thank you. 13th chapter of Paul's letter to the Corinthians. If you've ever been to a wedding, whether it's in a church or not, you've almost certainly heard at least part of this passage. If Paul got extra royalties for all the times that this was read, being misinterpreted that he was writing about romantic love, he'd be in Fat City. Oh, I guess he is in Fat City. He's not writing about romantic love. He's not writing about erotic love. He's not writing about the love of a friend for another. He's not writing about the love of family. He is writing about that kind of love that in English we can only describe by using the original Greek that Paul used, agape, or the Latin, caritas. It is the love of complete self-sacrifice, of constancy and action. It is not merely a concept, not simply an emotion. It is a love that requires us to do something, and that something must be to build up the life of another or of others. In something of a litany, Paul is telling the Corinthians, who have become carried away with the gifts of the Spirit, that none of the gifts of the Spirit, whether human or divine, none of their gifts mean anything without loving action that actually helps to heal some part of this broken world. He couldn't be more plain. And in the gospel, we continue the scene that we heard last week. Jesus is in the temple and has proclaimed from the book of Isaiah and has taken to himself the role of the prophet, declaring his mission to bring a message of divine love, to comfort the afflicted, heal the broken, and bring freedom to the imprisoned and oppressed. Now we hear what was initially awe and wonder on the part of those listening to him become suspicion and doubt. Isn't this Joseph's son? The word left out but implied is, isn't this just Joseph's son? He's the kid from down the block. He has no right to talk this way. But Jesus does not back down. He demonstrates to them with their own scriptures, with their own tradition, the pattern of truth, divine love, truth, being rejected especially when someone familiar speaks it. The prophet Elijah and Elisha, he reminds them, had to work their wonders among the Gentiles. And even his own reference to his works in Capernaum, are among the Gentiles. And at this, his audience, who last week were listening almost enraptured, literally run him out of town to the edge of the cliff, quite intent on killing him. But he passes through the mob unnoticed. That certainly sets Jesus apart, at least for a while, from the other prophets so common having to suffer physical consequences of the rage that the message of divine love brings out from power in this world. But we know the end of the story. The consequences will come. Now, I want to tell you about the first Charles. I met him almost 50 years ago, and I think of him almost every time I hear this passage from Paul about love, agape, caritas. I was a 7th or 8th grader at All Saints School in downtown Tucson, and he was a priest of the parish who made all of the people in the middle school classes, then called junior high, learn that passage by heart, the long version. He was passionate about his ministry. He was charismatic, especially with young people. And he started a movement in our little parish that became the genesis of one of the real cultural treasures of the whole community of Tucson. It's still going on and growing today. He did a lot of real good, but he did a lot of terrible damage too. His death 20 years ago was self-inflicted while he was under criminal investigation. He was a messenger of divine love in a very tragically flawed human vessel. But the good that he brought lives on as we struggle to make up for the damage as well. The second Charles I met just a couple of weeks ago. It was a late Friday afternoon. I happened to be in the parish office, and a call came in from a man who said, "I have to talk to somebody." It was almost 5 o'clock. It was about 5 minutes before 5. And I was the only one around with a car and the freedom to go anywhere. I was supposed to be at a party in 35 minutes. I said, "Okay, where are you? I'll come talk to you." I don't know where that response came from. It must have been the grace of ordination, because this is not my character. My natural human character would have been to give him a phone number and tell them to call somebody else. But I went to meet him at a restaurant down by the freeway, and his name was Charles. He's a homeless man, about 135 pounds, carrying a 65-pound backpack. He'd been homeless, he told me, for about 7 years. He's not a drug or alcohol abuser. He suffers from depression. And picture this, as a homeless person, suffers from Crohn's disease. He's a really beautiful man, an unemployed construction worker. I knew he was sincere. I met him at a restaurant. He had paid his own tab before I got there. He wasn't there looking for a handout. He said, "I just want someone to talk to me as if I were a human." He wasn't sure he was anymore. So I got a chance to talk to him. And I asked him what would make his day great. And he said, "Well, have you heard of this town called Benson? I hear it's a pretty nice place." So I gave him a ride to Benson. I was a little late for the party, but I didn't miss anything. On the way down, listening to some music and letting him relax in my car seat, I got to talk to him. He was very sophisticated. High school education, on the road for the last 7 years. very theologically sophisticated. He kept telling me about all of the beautiful things in his life and how he could make it through and how he would make it through and how he knew the presence of God in his life. It was an amazing thing. It was a beautiful privilege. He had been in Tucson about a week and had been beaten twice, had been hospitalized and then booted out of the hospital. His hands were crippled, not from arthritis or anything like that. I think he's about 50. But from being stomped on in beatings. And yet he kept going down the road. He was a messenger of divine presence in a wounded human package who passed through our midst unnoticed. So today, I want to ask you, challenge you, to look to the flaws that each of us carry. Look within yourself and ask yourself, what of my flaws will damage the good that I am called to do? And look to the burdens that you carry and ask yourself, what of my burdens makes the presence of God in my life invisible, so that we, each of us, this week, will not let Jesus pass through our midst unnoticed.